Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hello and welcome. This is Dr. Shaheen Gadir, and I'm an expert in the world of fertility, the area that I love and have passion for. I have helped thousands of people around the globe start their beautiful families, and in this podcast, The Fertile Life, I interview guests about their path to parenthood and dive into discussions around how the road to becoming a parent shapes us. Through insightful conversations, I hope to create a guide for listeners in all stages of life and break many stigmas often associated with fertility. Follow along as I take you through the journey towards the fertile life.
Y'all, I am so excited to announce it is finally all happening. Shenanigans is going live May 12th in New York City at City Winery. Tickets are available today. You can get them for $25. We're also doing a VIP meet and greet photo op package for $50. And I am just so excited to meet you guys, finally take the show live and get into some shenanigans. But first, here's today's episode.
From Vanderpump Rules to motherhood and everywhere in between, it's time to catch up with Sheena Shea. This is Shenanigans. And now, here's your host, Sheena Shea.
Hello, hello, everyone. Today, we are joined virtually by former MTV VJ, TV personality, and host of the podcast, Waiting for Impact, Mr. Dave Holmes. How are you?
Sheena, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Honored to be here.
I was so excited when I got the ask for you to be on my show, and we've been trying to make this happen for months, and we're finally doing it.
It's finally happening. I was thrilled that they reached out. This is great.
Yeah.
It's good to meet you.
You as well. So where are you today?
Well, I'm at home. I'm in my office that I've, you know, barely left in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I am in what I am told is the nexus of the Vanderpump Valley.
Oh.
I think I am equidistant from all of the big white houses.
No way.
I know for sure that Jackson Brittany are right around the corner from me.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess the others are scattered around the area. We haven't met.
Vanderpump Valley. Yeah, I was just there this past weekend for a birthday party, and we went from one house to the next. And I mean, you could walk. It's so close.
Yeah, that's what I'm told. I only know for sure where the one is. They're all within like a block or two of me. You possibly walked right past my house.
I probably did.
Exciting. You know, I'm thrilled that they've jazzed up the neighborhood.
Yeah, no, it's so nice. It really is.
It was kind of sleepy before, but now, hot, hot, hot.
Yeah, you got cameras hopefully rolling again soon, so.
I guess so, yeah.
We'll
see. So. This all happened like right around at the start of lockdown. So We started doing a thing in early lockdown where we would just like put chairs and a table on our front lawn and make a martini and wave at our neighbors.
Yeah.
And then slowly, you know, because in LA, you don't really know your neighbors all that well. But one by one, people would stop by, you know, when they were out walking their dogs or, you know, out, you know, with their stroller or whatever. And we would find that the Nalgene bottles were full of gin and tonic. And, you know, little by little, we got to know our neighbors, which was a pleasure. None of the cast members have we met yet, but I have seen Jax driving around on what looks like a cooler on wheels.
Yes. It is an ice chest cooler on wheels. That's exactly right.
Fantastic. That's the kind of ingenuity I can get behind.
Definitely. Well, thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk to me today. I've got to tell you, I have Motown Philly in my head because I was just watching the music video to see this part, this 3-second clip of this band, Sudden Impact, because I wanted to understand where your fascination with them came from. So for those of you who don't know, this has been, what, 3 decades in the making?
It's been a good 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, as you said, Boyz II Men have their big debut video. They've been signed by Michael Bivins of New Edition and Bell Biv DeVoe, who is starting kind of his own entertainment company as part of Motown. And so Boyz II Men, he signs. A group called Another Bad Creation, who have a couple top 10 hits, he signs. And then, like, his third act in his, like, 3-artist development deal is a boy band called Sudden Impact. And they get a little cameo in the video from Motown Philly, which becomes, you know, one of the biggest videos of the year, 1991.
Totally.
Yeah, unescapable. And it's like, it's a big debut. Their name is literally in lights over their heads, and they, like, point at the camera, real bold, like, you know, here we come.
Yeah, and then we're that the was next kind big of, thing.
Were the next big thing. And, you know, it was, you could believe that they would be, you know, New Kids on the Block were big at the time. Obviously Boyz II Men exploded and became the biggest selling R&B group of all time. So in the back of my mind, I was always like, whatever happened to Sudden Impact? And like in 1991, we had no internet really. So there was kind of nowhere to like research them. If they did any kind of interviews, it was for like a newspaper and that'd be on paper. And that went away. So it was just kind of one of those weird little mysteries. You know, we're in this time when there's really no such thing as like arguments about facts anymore, because everyone has a computer in their pocket and you can always find out, you know, what happened to whoever, you know, in the blink of an eye. And there's stuff that happened just before that I think is really interesting. And that was one of them. So, we're now living in the world of the podcast where I can actually like swindle someone into paying me money to like do 10 episodes looking into this story, which I did. For me, it's like there's so much around it. You know, it's a music industry, not quite rise and fall because there wasn't much of a rise. There's a music industry story there, but then there's also, you know, there's stuff to think about the nature of success and failure and what happens when you have a big dream and it looks like it's about to happen and it just doesn't. There's just a lot of story there. So I got to tell it. 10 episodes. They're all out now.
That's so awesome. It's like taking investigative journalism to a whole new level.
Exactly. You know, we're living in a really interesting time. Like you can kind of just get a crazy idea and then go do it. And that's, I don't know, that's a thrill.
So you see the band Sudden Impact for a second in the video. You also see the other band, Bad Creation. So what happened to them?
They blew up. They had 2 hit songs. They had Aisha and Playground. You know, they released a few more albums and they probably do a reunion tour every couple years, but they, you know, they had a moment and they made some money and they sold some records. If you search for Another Bad Creation, you'll find them. If you search for Sudden Impact, you get the Clint Eastwood movie and that's about it. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm fascinated by the moment just before the internet came and kind of ruined our brains when you could have like a moment in the spotlight and then just kind of disappear.
Totally.
You know? There's no disappearing anymore.
Yeah, that's such an interesting thing because I remember with dial-up, the late or like mid-90s, I think I was in maybe junior high at the time, when the internet came around. But anything before that, it's like, what, you have to go to the library, you have to find old papers.
Exactly.
So that's got to be so hard to research.
Well, it was kind of, but I had a lucky break, which was that as Michael Bivins expanded his sort of empire that he was building at Motown, he signed a bunch more acts, and most of them didn't really release anything either. There was a group called 702 that had Where My Girl's At.
I remember that. Yeah.
Oh,
from
sure.
From the front to back. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Is he feeling that? Put one hand up.
Yeah. Can you repeat that?
Yes, trying to take my man. See, I don't need that. So don't play yourself. We could reconstruct it all day long. And
I loved that
you
song.
Know, when one of the gang has a karaoke party, let's duet on that one.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Because I'll go. I'll crash it if I'm not.
Monday nights at Rockin' Riley's.
Oh, is that where it is?
Yeah, my friend Jesse Montana hosts a karaoke night. So as soon as I'm back in LA, I'm going to let you know and we're going to do it. Yeah.
Boom. Great. I'll do my vocal warm-ups. We'll be ready to go.
Perfect.
But another young singer who he signed, who Michael Bivins signed in around 1991, 92, who I found out through my research, her name, she recorded under the name Yvette, but we know her now as Yvette Nicole Brown, who is, you know, Emmy-nominated actress. She's been on every sitcom in the world. And she's like, you know, she's kind of in my orbit. She's friends of friends of mine. So I was able to track her down and talk about her, you know, secret life as a pop star for a moment in 1991. And she kind of got me deeper into what was known as the East Coast family that Sudden Impact was part of. And so luckily I had an in. Thank God.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. How fun.
It was a ball. It was just a ball.
So what do you hope that people take away from this podcast?
We do a weird and kind of cruel thing to ourselves and to each other when it comes to, you know, like having a big dream and like and reaching for the brass ring and you know, trying to be a star or whatever. If it doesn't work out, then we call the people who it doesn't work out for has-beens or also-rans or, you know, these kind of demeaning, dehumanizing names. We're so addicted to the idea of success meaning fame and fortune and be constantly hustling to like get that money and become famous. And as life goes on, that doesn't guarantee happiness. You know, when you start, like when I started out in my career, I just wanted to be a part of it. I just wanted to like write or produce or just work in the world of TV somehow. I just wanted to be inside and help make it. And then, you know, as you start to get a little bit of work and you make a bit of a name for yourself, this thing takes over where it's like your vanity makes you, you know, like you don't just, now that once you're in the room where it happens, then it's like, well, now I want to be in the VIP section of the room where it happens. And then it's like, then I want my name, you know, in lights on the marquee at the club and whatever.
Yeah.
You like forget what got you into it, which was just a desire to make art and to like be where it's happening. I talked to the guys in the band, spoiler alert, but I find one by one
the
guys in the band. But I also talked to a bunch of other people who I'm interested in who had success in the early 90s and then, you know, then just it sputtered out or they decided they didn't want it and they went in another direction or whatever. And it's, we really kind of drill down into like, what does success mean? And if, you know, if you're not Rihanna, are you a failure? Like if you don't sustain a massive career, does that mean that you were bad or not talented or that you did something wrong? Or is it just like you kind of switched gears and you recalibrated and you moved on? And that's like fine too. You know, you can still be happy. The objective of this life is to be happy, not to be, you know, not to necessarily be Rihanna. That we've got one and she's doing great.
Yeah. Well, speaking of careers, you had an amazing career with MTV. I remember watching you on my TV for so many years, whether it was MTV News or TRL or any of the, you know, New Year's Eve. You've hosted so many things. So how did your career start with MTV? And just in general, like, did you go to school for broadcast journalism?
No. No, I did. When I was in high school, I lied. There was a really good college station very near where I grew up, and I listened to it obsessively. And when I got, in fact, I think a little before I got my driver's license, I think I might have ridden my bike to it and lied and said that I was a freshman. Mm-hmm. And I got an on-air shift. I had a Saturday afternoon shift for the rest of high school. And then I put it away because I felt like if I didn't become a star that way, then it would be like shameful to pursue that line of work. I didn't know how to like have a respectable career doing anything artistic. And I had always been an actor and a writer and all that kind of thing. In college, I really put it away to try to be more practical and be what I thought a man should be. and I graduated and I worked in advertising in New York for a few years and tried to be normal, and it just did not work at all. And I was sad and angry. And so I went to MTV to, they did an open call for VJs in 1998. And I called in sick from work and I stood in line and I auditioned, and then I made like the top 10. And from the top 10 forward, it was all televised. It was all on live TV. Mm-hmm. And it dwindled us down to like a top 5 or 6. And then like on a live Saturday afternoon show, there was a call-in vote to, you know, it was called Wanna Be a VJ. So it was like the viewer got to vote on who got it. And I did not get it. I came in second.
Who was first?
A guy named Jesse Camp.
Okay.
Who was, if you remember, he was like a punk rock sort of character. Like,
I don't remember
tall,
him.
Very skinny. He was like a big character.
Okay. You know?
He was a very wild person. He was like 18 and a character in a way that I am not. So he got the job, and I guess I was 26 or 27 at the time. And I was like, I am not going to let this like slip through my fingers. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm, you know, the people there kind of know who I am, and maybe I can get a writing job and maybe I can get a production assistant job. But I'm like, I'm not going back to this advertising job that sucks my soul out of my body. Like, I am going to like call all of the people that I met through that experience and just keep nudging them until they either give me a job or say, we're calling the police. And luckily they gave me a job, and yeah, it was a writing job at first. And then because, you know, I was around the studios, I screen tested for a show and that got picked up, and it ended up working out, which is shocking. And I was there for 4.5 years.
Wow.
And then suddenly it was like, you know, I went from, I kept my roommates. It stayed in the same place, but like my day-to-day job was like, you know, talking to Tom Cruise today, and next week I'm going to the Bahamas for the summer and whatever. It was crazy. Like,
yeah.
My life just got bananas overnight.
Oh my God.
Which I would imagine you understand.
Yeah, very different though, because I mean, I remember being in high school and literally being an MTV VJ was a dream job for me.
Oh, totally.
Started studying broadcast journalism in college. I've always truly had a passion for hosting. And yeah. So just like watching all of your careers start on MTV was just so awesome, because
thanks.
That's something, yeah, I've just always wanted to do. I still hope to do one day. Caduce is a good friend of mine. I've known him for many of years. And I remember when I met him, it was like, I don't get starstruck by like big celebrities. I've met so many celebrities. Although when I saw Elton John at Craig's one night, that was like, whoa.
Tell me everything.
It's Elton John.
Yeah.
He was standing a foot away from me. And I was like, oh, do I say something? Do I not? And then he had like security around him. I didn't. I just stared at him in admiration. And I didn't want to bother him. Like, we're at Craig's and, you know, you don't go there to be bothered by a fan. There's paparazzi outside. So I didn't. But that was the one time by a big celebrity that I was like truly starstruck. But I remember when I met Caduce, I was just like, oh my God, like I've been such a fan of you and like every MTV VJ since as long as I can remember, like Vanessa Minnillo and.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild. And it's such a different kind of thing. And I would imagine it's similar to like to what you get, where it's like you're in my position, it was, you know, there were scripts to read and there was work to do, but I was essentially just being myself,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, there was a lot of live TV where it was just kind of, it depended on my personality. And like, and you're you on the show.
Yeah.
And do fans walk up on you like they know you?
Oh, all the time. You have no idea.
Okay.
How about this? I was at Tom Tom the other night and we're talking to fans like the entire night. At one point, don't know if it was a fan or just a random person, but I walked away to the bathroom and I announced to my friends, I'm leaving my purse right here. And someone, I don't know if they thought they knew me well enough that they could just go in my purse, went in my wallet and stole 3 of my credit cards.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was a bad experience for me at Tom Tom.
Like that
somewhere
at all.
I go to meet people and I just have such a good time. And yeah, that happened. But But normally, they don't steal from
us. Okay, that's not cool at all.
Yeah. So that was it was crazy. But all the time, I mean, people literally where I live, I'm on the sand in San Diego. We live on the beach. And I'll just be standing out there sometimes and people will be riding their bikes and like, oh my God, is that Sheena? I'm like, hi. Yeah. But I mean, I love it. Yeah. Because if we don't have fans, you know, we don't have a job. We don't have a show. So
exactly.
I appreciate all of that.
Was it real quick? I mean, like, did you notice, like, one day, like, hold on, people are staring at me, or people are whispering, or
yeah, I think it was like when we started probably filming the second season, it was already popular so quick because our first season when it aired, I remember Stassi and I went with Lisa to New York and we were on The View, and I'm like, yeah. Wait, what is this? This is a show I watch with my mom, and now I'm on it, like. What? And then I remember being in New York in a hotel and someone came up and recognized me. And from there, the show just got even more popular that now it was weird in 2020 when like that didn't happen for a while and we're wearing masks and I'm in a hat and I'm at Walmart and like someone didn't come up to me. And then the second, you know, things started lifting, when people would come up to me, I'm like, oh my God, do you have COVID? You don't have a mask on. Ah, but now I feel so much better about it. And now it's just nice that the world is opening back up again. The mask mandates have dropped and people, I say, you know, yeah.
It happened fast too.
It did. It really did.
Yeah. Like the day before the mandate got dropped, I went, there's a new Erewhon down Coldwater in the Vanderpump Valley. And I went in and nobody had a mask on.
Yeah.
And I think it was like a combination of like, you know, Erewhon people being like, I'm healthy enough, or just like that sort of like wealthy Valley person entitlement or what.
Oh, totally.
But it was just like suddenly after 2 years, I was like, I'm seeing strangers' faces. I got emotional.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
I know.
It was heavy.
I mean, there was a one time where I had someone in my house and when I walked downstairs, this was for like our gender reveal. And when I walked downstairs, I was like, who is this person in my house for a very intimate moment? And it was my acupuncturist, who's now a very good friend of mine. Also, she was a very close friend of my fiance's. And I had never seen her without a mask. Once she spoke and I heard her voice, I was like, oh my God, it's Monica.
Wow.
But I remember walking downstairs and I'm like, who is in my house for this intimate moment? And I was like, wow, I had for 5 months I had been seeing her and it was like, I never saw her without a mask.
Wow.
So to be able to see people's faces again. So nice.
Are people nice when they approach you?
Yes, that's the thing. They're not nice on the internet, but they're always nice when they approach me.
Do you engage online when people are...
I do when people are wrong. I enjoy putting people in their place and giving the full story. So when someone comments on something and they're incorrect, I will correct them. If they're just talking shit, I'm just like, whatever. Sometimes I would block or restrict. Now I just pretty much ignore. But when someone's incorrect about something, I'm like, well, let me just tell you all the facts. And then if you still don't like me, then it is what it is.
Okay.
But
and does that work?
Usually, yeah. And I get a lot of apologies or like, oh my God, I didn't think you would ever see this. I'm so sorry. I'm like, then why did you say it if you didn't think I was going to see it? You just needed to vent. So you're venting to me about me.
Or they just believe on some level that you don't actually exist, that you are like a character on
totally.
TV.
I know.
He's not a real person.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I know. It's crazy.
I always wonder that with, so I will tell you this. I worked, this was probably 2019.
Okay.
18, 19. I did a show for Bravo that was originally called Real Men Watch Bravo.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. It was me and Jerry O'Connell and Michael Yo and Brendan Schaub. So I like crammed as much Bravo as I could in before we did those three episodes. And then it didn't get picked up. And I wasn't like bitter, but I was like, Bravo, I need a break.
Yeah.
So we've been on. And then during lockdown, I was like, I don't have the emotional bandwidth for anything.
Oh,
like
it's so
longer
much.
Than a music video or whatever. So I've been catching up. Just watched you guys at Sunstone.
Where, oh my gosh.
We were up in Santa Ynez for my birthday this past weekend.
Oh, nice.
We were like ships in the night again.
Yeah, right? I know. We're going to have to, a karaoke night. That's where it's going to happen.
A wine-fueled karaoke night at a house in Santa Ynez.
Yes. Oh, I would love that.
Absolutely. I'm in.
Yeah. I remember that show because Jerry O'Connell, he's obviously been on like Watch What Happens Live so many times, and he's a big times. Bravo fan. We've met before. He's on my bucket list of podcast guests, so I need to reach out to him. But I was so excited for this show. And then, it just, what the hell, Bravo?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think maybe at that particular moment in human history, it was maybe not the best look to have like an all-male panel.
Yeah,
you know,
but it's a thing, like real men watch Bravo, like that's on their shirts and...
Yeah.
They literally sell t-shirts.
Yeah, that was not the best title in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I was not like the biggest Housewives guy to begin with, but I auditioned. I just sort of like I watched a few and I wrote some jokes and it worked out.
Yeah.
But it was it could have been fun.
It could have.
It was a fun 3 weeks.
Yeah. So you've done so many interviews. Do you have one that stands out as your best and as your worst?
Ooh. Oh God. I don't know. Do I want to like,
you don't have to say necessarily who off? You could say who the best one is, but the worst, you could just tell the experience.
Honestly, I feel like right now I'm starting to get, and now I'm an editor at large for Esquire. And so I get to like, I talk to different people than I did when I was at MTV, and I get to get into it more deeply. And I find that really, really satisfying. Like it's not as glamorous, but it's really satisfying. I just got to, this is not a sexy answer, but I got to interview, Anthony Edwards from ER and Top Gun and all that. Who's like an actor who, you know, has been in my life for decades. Such an interesting guy. And he opened up about being a survivor of sexual assault when he was a kid and the things that he's doing to like help destigmatize that for other, you know, for other men and for, you know, people in the military and whatever. And it was just, it got way deeper than I was ever able to get with, you know, Jessica Simpson.
Right.
When I had, you know, 45 seconds to talk to her in between videos or whatever. I'll tell you, I mentioned Tom Cruise before. So I came out to LA to do, it was right around the time Mission Impossible 2 came out. And there was like a Limp Bizkit video from it and whatever. And we interviewed him as part of the junket for that movie out here at the Four Seasons in West Hollywood. And he had him in a room and there was a little tiny studio audience. And I was there with a couple producers who were friends of mine. And he came in and like the energy in the, like the molecules in the air started to like vibrate differently. Like it was so like, everybody was kind of dumbstruck. Yeah. One of my producers greeted him, said, "Hey, money," and then like brought him to his seat. And then like he and I, Tom Cruise and I talked for like 10 minutes and he did that big Tom Cruise laugh anytime I said something that he thought was a joke. And it was so, he was so intense and so into it that I was like, I'm best friends with Tom Cruise. Like we're going to, when this is over, we're going to like go to the hotel bar and then we'll do karaoke. Like I was like, this is real and this is happening. And then our 10 minutes ended and the crowd like applauded and he was just gone. Like off to do it again in another room. And my producer was like, did I call him money? I've never called a human being money in my life. Like there's just he does something to you that it's weird. It's charisma. It's just like truly charisma. So I probably didn't do the best job in that interview, but he really made me feel like I did. And that's key.
Did you ever get to interview Britney Spears?
Sure did. Many times. Yeah. In fact, like real early, I don't know if it was me when we premiered Baby One More Time. It was either her like first or second visit I was there.
Yeah.
And yeah. And
on TRL?
That was, yeah. And she was, what I remember from her was like 100% the professional. Like I, you know, going on to live TV, I always had a little bit of nervous energy and anxiety, but she was like, she just was cool as a cucumber and like, you know, at the center of a million record industry people and publicists and stylists and all that, you know, a lot of pressure on her shoulders, but you would never have known it. She was very poised. You know, there's a lot going on that we didn't know about, but you know, in those early days, she really seemed like she was very much in control, which I think in the early days she kind of was. And then, you know, everything kind of changed.
Yeah. I mean, now, you know, she's free. Britney has been freed. The conservatorship is dropped. What did you think about that? For how long it went on, for her family, just for how that all went down?
It's what's wild to me is how it became like the Free Britney movement. When I first became aware of it, which, by the way, was started by a couple of friends of mine, Tess Barker and Babs Gray, had a podcast called Britney's Graham. And then you know the story now, like an anonymous attorney gave them all this information. And then the Free Britney movement kind of grew out of that. And there was so much like analysis, like deep granular analysis of her Instagram and her captions. And like, to me, I called it gay QAnon, right? Because it just seemed like, you're going too deeply into it. Pretty much everything has like borne out as fact.
Yeah.
Right? So I just hope that I hope that we can leave her alone now. You know, and I'm not holding out a lot of hope because, you know, whatever it was 12 years ago when she went into this thing, we weren't all carrying, you know, cameras and video equipment in our pocket the way that we are now, or at least it wasn't as sophisticated. And now it's like everybody can get that shot. And as much as I would like to think that we've grown as a society, I still think people are going to be looking for that one picture of her looking a little fucked up
or
something. And I hope that we can like have more grace than that, but I'm not super optimistic about it.
You got to interview her on TRL, and I just got to give a shout out to that show, man. I miss TRL.
I mean, you know, it's wild to have been there like when that thing was built, you know, and like I started in the summer of 98 and there was the countdown show called Total Request, and there was MTV Live, which was the daily live show. And then that autumn they like merged them, and like, you know, it was this thing that happened in the afternoon that, you know, barely anyone watched, and there was no one out in Times Square. And then like 6 months later, the police are like monitoring the situation in Times Square so the kids don't get hit by a bus, and the ratings are through the roof, and like these new stars are being minted, and it was completely insane. And like, I was a big MTV junkie when I was 12, 13, 14. And, you know, that was like the mid 80s. So it was all, you know, Madonna and Prince and Michael Jackson and all of that stuff and all of their like MTV appearances and those, like the stuff that I saw on that network is like indelible. And it made me want to get out and like be an artist of some kind. And so to like, now that the 12, 13, 14 year olds of the TRL era are like in their 30s and are, you know, some of them really are running LA. And when I have a meeting and people like, you know, have like strong and specific memories of things that happened on TRL, it's like, God, what a privilege, you know, to like have just sort of been a part of that for someone, you know?
So awesome.
Yeah, it was. And even at the time, even when it was, you know, annoying or whatever, it was still, everybody was really grateful for like, for the fact that we were there. Like it was wild as hell.
Totally. I mean, music television has changed so much since those days when it was actually music television. Now on MTV, you know, it's 16 and Pregnant. It's Jersey Shore. It's so much reality TV that we've lost the music television aspect. You have to go on YouTube or Vimeo or wherever now to watch music videos, so much that I don't even watch music videos anymore.
Yeah, I largely don't. But here's the thing. What happened when YouTube happened and when the streaming services happened is you were never not in charge of what comes next, right? Like if you, a thing that we have started doing in lockdown is my boyfriend put up a projection area in our backyard, and we'll have our friends over and I'll make a collaborative YouTube playlist and everyone gets to add a few things, and it's music videos and live performances and comedy sketches and whatever. But basically like we direct it, right? And when you sit down to watch a bunch of YouTube stuff, you're in charge. And when you make a playlist on Spotify, you're in charge of what comes next. The idea of like letting someone else curate your experience for you, especially a stranger, you know, in like some suit in a building, is like, that was how I grew up and how you grew up, but it's not how the kids are coming up now.
That's
and
so
like, they're
true.
Not, there's no interest in them giving that control back to someone else.
Yeah.
You know, the internet and all this stuff, it's great and it's very convenient, but it killed what music television is. Like even radio. I don't know anyone who listens to like the radio anymore.
No.
Do you?
My mom, but I finally have upgraded her to Sirius. So now she's okay, like, good. How could I ever go back to radio?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. A major leap forward. Yeah. With my mom, so I've got this podcast now, and it's she is so from the age of radio that it's like I cannot make her understand that there's no such thing as missing an episode. She's always like, oh, did I miss it? Like, no, you didn't. It's just, it's a podcast. It's going to be there, you know?
Right.
Okay, what channel? There's no channel, Mom. It's just going to, it's in your pocket. It's in your pocket when you're ready for it. But that's like, that is so much a part of her identity that it's like, she can't shake that. And on the, you know, on the flip side of that coin is like the kids who just kind of wouldn't watch an hour of music videos if you put it in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Apple TV tried to do something like that and I couldn't do it.
Some of the best music videos, I feel like, used to be all of the boy bands in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Sure. Who was your favorite?
I was going to ask you the same. So were you NSYNC or Backstreet?
I'm giving a slight edge to NSYNC.
Yeah, same.
Same, right?
Yeah. So NSYNC was, well, first, if you're going to ask my favorite, it would have started with New Kids on the Block. I remember,
well, of course.
Well, I guess maybe I don't know if I can really remember when I was like three or four, but I do still to this day have two of the New Kids on the Blocks. I have Jordan and Donnie. I have their Barbies in my case that's in storage. Like I still have those Barbies. And I remember Jordan had like the braid, like the rat tail, and I didn't
like it.
And I cut it off.
Okay. I think that was a smart aesthetic move.
Yeah. But so it started with New Kids on the
Good
Block.
Good eye from an early age.
Right? Yeah. And then NSYNC, Backstreet. I mean, but then I loved 98 Degrees when they came out. And then, you know, LFO was around briefly.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing with like 98 Degrees and LFO. Were you ready at that age for that degree of arms? For that like kind of a Chippendales sort of a moment? Because like Backstreet and NSYNC, they were all in shape and stuff, but like you kind of had to.
It was different.
You had to create the image in your mind.
Yeah.
98 Degrees just busted out in tank tops.
Oh, totally.
You know, fresh off of arm day.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that for the young gal of the late 90s?
I mean, I think that probably made me more interested in men with muscles because my first boyfriend in high school had the arms and ended up getting the tattoos just like the guys in 98 Degrees. So maybe that's where it started.
It could
be. Know?
It could be. Set a type.
Yeah.
You mentioned New Kids on the Block. Joey McIntyre is on Waiting for Impact. He's in episode, I think, 4. Because he's somebody I wanted to talk to because, you know, they were on top of the world. They did get that, like, massive success that Sudden Impact was going for. But then it all kind of, you know, Nirvana blew up and the culture changed. And they, like, they dropped off sharply.
Mm-hmm.
And he has so much good stuff to say. He's a really interesting guy. And they have a new song out, and I really like it.
Really?
Yes.
See, I love that the bands are all getting back together. We need an NSYNC reunion. Like, do you think Justin Timberlake will ever do it?
I can't imagine.
I know.
I know.
But, like...
He's given us a little taste, like, in his, was it at the Video Music Awards?
Yes.
Or at his halftime show or something? There was a brief reunion, like the way Beyonce did with Destiny's Child. But it was just kind of like, okay, there's you do the Running Man real quick and Running Man yourself.
I did
out
it.
Of here.
There you go.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I can't imagine. He's an interesting case because, you know, in this year where we're kind of revisiting the way that we treated Britney Spears, a lot of people's attention is on like, well, Justin Timberlake was kind of a D-bag.
Yeah.
In that moment, you know,
totally.
Like he did some questionable stuff and the statements that he's made in recent years have been a little clunky.
Yeah.
So, you know, honestly, actually maybe as like, as a way to sort of rehabilitate his image, maybe we will get a brief NSYNC reunion. But yeah, I don't know.
The Backstreet tour, a reunion tour in Vegas. Did you get to see the show at all?
No, I didn't.
Oh my God. It was incredible. It was so good that I was like, am I sure I was Team NSYNC over Backstreet? Because it was just such a good show.
Yeah. Okay. I would imagine they would put on a good show.
Yeah.
Who did you like in Backstreet?
Ooh, I think Nick was always my favorite. He was the youngest. They were all a little older than myself. So Nick was my favorite. My mom always liked Kevin. She thought Kevin was so sexy. And last year, my fiance Brock got to play in a golf tournament with Kevin, and I was the cart girl, right? So I'm driving around and I'm like, oh my God, Kevin Richardson is on Brock's team. Like, I need to go and like deliver them cigars and alcohol, and I want to meet him. And so I just like had a fangirl moment. I was like, I don't care, I'm 36 years old, I'll fangirl for a minute. And I was I'm Sheena. I was like, this is my fiance. I said, you guys were so great back in Vegas. I got to go backstage. I have like photos with you. I got to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And Brock is like, who is this guy she's talking to? And he kind of pulls me aside and he goes, who is that? And I was like, Kevin from the Backstreet Boys. You don't even know who you're playing golf with?
Look at those eyebrows.
I know.
Look at those eyebrows.
Yeah. And so now we're friends with him and his wife. We're invited to their tour that they're doing this summer. And I'm like, how cool. Who would have thought that like in high school, you would become friends with these people you idolized in bands? It's so wild.
It's real weird. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's strange, you know, like I will catch myself being that way, having to remind myself that like some of the people I know in real life are people. Like every now and then I do get a little carried away with the fanboy, you know? Okay. NSYNC. Who is your boy in NSYNC?
So fun story here. JC. I loved JC. I also liked Lance. Justin was not my fave. He was my third. It went JC, then Lance, and then Justin. And when I was in college, I was at a club and JC was there. And I'm like, play it cool, play it cool. Ended up talking to him. I wasn't 21. I had a fake ID. Didn't tell him that I wasn't 21. I mean, I was still of age, but I was 20. We were in college and my girlfriends and I got invited back to his house for an after party. And I have a photo. It's in storage, but it's in my box of like photos because there were no iPhones or anything back then. I don't even think I had a BlackBerry yet. And we had like a digital camera and I have a photo with him dancing on a table in his house that was like up Mount Olympus area.
Uh-huh. And that tracks.
Yeah, I have a photo dancing on a table with him that it was just like, what is my life? I'm just a college student studying broadcast journalism and now I'm hanging out with JC Chazé from NSYNC.
What on earth?
Yeah. Wow.
JC
fun.
Is absolutely the right answer. Mm-hmm. A. And B, talk me through a JC after party. What kind of debauchery are we talking about?
I mean, it was so small. It was only me, two of my girlfriends, and one, maybe two of his friends. Uh-huh. And honestly, like to this day, I mean, I bet if I hit him up, like we could still be cool and hang out. I ran into him years ago and I was like, he doesn't remember me. And he was like, Sheena. I was like, wait, what? We were at the Grove and we were both going to see, I think it was Inside Out, whatever year that came out. That was the last time I ran into him. And he totally remembered me. And I'm like, wow, I didn't think you would, but we had stayed in touch over the years, just a text here or there, maybe see him at an event. And yeah, he was always my favorite. And to just get to be in his presence and then get invited to an after party and then kind of loosely stay in touch for years was
incredible.
So cool.
Incredible. Justin, the hair was rough at the beginning. The hair was hard to get past.
Mm-hmm.
The tight, tight curls. It was too much.
Yeah.
It was a little too much. He grew into it.
Yeah.
The Justified era, I mean, by then he had had it pulled together.
Oh, totally.
At first, there were some deficits to overcome.
Yeah, agreed.
At first. Yeah.
And I feel like boy bands today, it's not the same. Like, I mean, One Direction, love them. But, you know, they don't do, like, the choreographed dancing and the matching and all of the stuff. It's just, it's so different.
Yeah, it really is. I got to go to SoFi Stadium down in Inglewood late last year for BTS.
Oh.
So I did a cover story on BTS for Esquire. Like, the bummer is that it happened, you know, in high COVID, so I didn't get to, like, actually go to South Korea and, like, do it properly. It was all over Zoom. But awesome guys, like, super friendly and great to talk to and all that. But I went to their show, and it was – I've never seen anything like it. They were mm-hmm. – like, the dancing was incredible. The showmanship, just everything about it was wild. And the crowd was old and young and male and female and everyone just, you know, flipping out. But it is, yeah, it's a very different world. There's still a lot of boy bands out there. It's just, you know.
Totally. It's just different. But yeah, they are the one I was thinking of that still, they dance, you know? I mean, I went to so many One Direction shows with my sister and I mean, they're great, you know, they put on a good show, but I just wanted to see them all do like a couple 8 counts together.
Come on.
You know?
Come on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me something.
A little something.
Stomp a foot. Do something.
Yeah. So you are with Esquire. You've got your podcast, your passion project, Waiting for Impact. What else do you have in the works right now?
Good Lord. I'm grinding at all times. I'm producing a couple TV things that are not like announced yet, but I also do a podcast called Homophilia with my friend Matt McConkey, mm-hmm. where we talk to awesome queer adults about their lives and their, you know, like the pop culture that they love and they're obsessed with and what their love lives look like. You know, the age of the podcast allows us to have deeper conversations than we were able to have publicly even just a few years ago.
Oh, totally. I love that.
Yeah, so I do that. I have a sort of game show podcast called Troubled Waters. Once we're back on stage properly, I do a comedy game show thing with my friend Scott Gimple, who's was the showrunner of The Walking Dead and is now just sort of in charge of The Walking Dead universe.
Okay.
Called the Friday 40, where we answer 40 questions about the events of the last week while we all drink 40s of beer.
Uh-huh. Fun.
And yeah, and then I'm just writing stuff all over the place. I'm doing a feature now for Runner's World and I'm writing for AARP magazine and I'm
busy,
trying to grind while the grinding's good, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been so much fun. I'm so glad we were able to make it work.
I am too. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Definitely. We're going to karaoke.
Yes, we are.
All right, everyone. If you haven't already, be sure to check out Dave Holmes' podcast, Waiting for Impact, among his many, many other projects. Dave, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Oh my God, that was so much fun.
Sheena Shea. Shay FK.
Thanks for listening to Shenanigans with Sheena Shea. Download new episodes every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.